Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Literacy View. We have another great show planned for you. We have a special guest. Her name is Missy Purcell. Many of you already know Missy. Yay, Missy. Let's talk about Missy's background. Missy is the co-founder of Gwinnett Advocates for Dyslexia. Am I saying that right, Gwinnett?
You got it. Gwinnett.
A grassroots organization that advocates for evidence-based instruction in Gwinnett County. Additionally, she serves as the education chair with Decoding Dyslexia Georgia, DDGA, which advocates for change at the state level. And Missy was a teacher. She is a teacher, but has 10 plus years of experience in the classroom, grades 3 to 8. She had stayed current in education practices by tutoring K-5 students in reading and writing and using evidence-based instruction. And she has 3 sons, which I believe brought her to this point. Yes. And we will hear about that too. So we are so pleased to have Missy with us. But before we begin, I do want to say that we are very sorry for your loss, Missy. We know your dad passed away, and we are just really heartbroken for you, but thrilled that you're willing to participate, and you have so many good things to say, and I know your dad would be proud. As you said, he was always very proud of you for speaking your mind and for standing up for children. So thank you for being here with us today. So to get started, let me fill our listeners in. We are going to be talking today about the Scarborough Reading Rope in connection to reading recovery. And this happened when Reading Recovery put up the reading rope and basically said that what they do in reading recovery aligns very well to the reading rope, which is about the simple view of reading that when you combine language comprehension and decoding, as in word recognition, that you will then get reading comprehension. And certainly, people have strong views on this. And I just wanted to say that my co-host, Judy Boxner, was a former reading recovery teacher. And so this is a hard conversation for someone to have when we are going to be discussing this. But I applaud Judy always for facing these hard discussions head on, never backing away. And even if she and I disagree about things, we have our bullshit buttons here. and we make a game out of it. And then we move on and we still are friends. So my name is Faith Workowski. I was a first grade teacher, which is, of course, the grade where children do receive reading recovery. I'm also a trained reading specialist, and I believe strongly in evidence-based approaches. So I think all three of us have a very strong background between teaching and understanding the different ways to approach reading. So I'm just going to jump right in. So Missy, when I looked at the rope that the reading recovery people put up, under the phonics portion, it used the words comprehensive, systematic, sequential, and explicit. From your experience, would you say that reading recovery used an explicit, systematic approach when your son, I don't know which one, you have 3 boys, I'm assuming the youngest?
Yes.
Was it the youngest?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
When your youngest, now 11, but then in first grade, received reading recovery intervention?
No, I'm 100% no. There was nothing systematic or sequential about it. It was an intervention that was offered to us because he had not learned to read in kindergarten. And about, gosh, maybe the first week of it, we were given a letter that encouraged us to read these books with him. And when he didn't come to a word, that it was okay, that he could just guess the word. And they gave us a couple things that he could use to guess the word. Like he could use the first letter, or he could use, you know, a picture, or even just the context of the book itself. And that continued even until about, I got about halfway through, I got a note from the teacher, letting us know that she was very concerned about Matthew, and that he was not making the progress that she had hoped to see, that he'd hit a plateau, and that they've reached some more challenging books, and she's not seeing a big drive out of him, and he's not attempting unknown words now. And even to go on to say he doesn't seem interested in reading, and that he seems to just be in a rush to get out of the class and go back to his, you know, regular classroom. Even kind of hinted, like, have you noticed this when you're reading at home? I think maybe to see if I was reading with him at home, and that they were just going to keep plugging away. So there were all these red flags that it was not systematic and sequential, evidence-based, that it was, and obviously not yielding the results that everyone had said it would yield. At one point we were even told that there's no need to request an SST for him, because that's probably like local language, but that is but the beginning of the MTSS process, or the multi-tier support system. So we used to call it an SST, which is a student support team. That was the first step to getting your kid maybe identified, or maybe do some testing, or to start collecting data just to see if there's something bigger. We were told to pause on that because reading recovery was the most comprehensive reading intervention that the county had. So there would be no need to jump into anything else because, you know, this one was the one. So I didn't see anything that, the only thing probably that was systematic about it to me was that he came home with a book every night, and that he went every day, and that he did the same things every day, but they weren't following any scope and sequence that, you know, these are words I now know. I didn't know these words back then, but there was no systematic approach to teaching him each of the sounds and how they correlated to the letters. And even with writing and spelling, it was more, I pulled up his reading recovery notebook. I keep everything in his journal, and every word in here was written by his teacher. Every single word, like, so it's supposed to be his, these are words I think that they work on, and then he's supposed to write them. But none of it was in his handwriting. And so we did not see any kind of like information shared with us that said, this is where your kid started off. These are the skills he knows, and this is where he's progressed. It was like, this is the number of the book he's on. I think when he plateaued, he was at like level 11, which didn't even equate to anything in even our own school system. We were very much a balanced literacy system, and we were using Fontes and Pinnell and the BAS system for evaluating kids' levels. But so it didn't even equate to that. So I would ask questions like, well, what level is he on? And, you know, what skills can he do? Like when they would tell me the number, I would say, well, what does that mean though? Like, does that mean my kid can read, you know, like one syllable words, or can he read two syllable words? And I couldn't get answers from them when I started asking these questions. So I would have to say, in our experience, no. And it wasn't until we actually got structured literacy that my child, you know, had like a full screen for all the skills that he should know. And he only knew like 20% of the 44 sounds in the English language. Mm-hmm. In the fourth grade. But I had a full sheet of, these are the skills he knows, the vowel teams and the digraphs and the trigraphs. I knew, but none of that was ever presented to us in reading recovery. And the only advice given to us was to keep reading. Yeah. And to keep plugging away. So,
okay. Yeah. So I, I love for Judy to respond to this. So Judy, you know, Missy had this experience as a parent, and even though she was a teacher, she taught older kids. So this was new to her. Would you say from your experience that what was on that reading rope on the reading recovery site under phonics, would you say it was comprehensive in terms of systematic, sequential, and explicit instruction? What do you think? What are your comments?
All right. So I know Faith mentioned that, you know, I was in reading recovery. In 2013, I've been very honest about my journey. Actually, let me start my journey earlier than that. So I was a classroom teacher for 15 years. I actually worked in so many schools that didn't actually even have curriculums at that time. There were modified versions of TC, a sprinkle of phonics here, a sprinkle of this and that. Then in 2013, Obama was the president at that time. I don't know if it was anything, you know, involved with politics or anything. I don't think about that stuff. But anyway, I was trained under a grant in 2013. It was called the I3 grant. I was actually a classroom teacher. I loved being a classroom teacher. That was my happy place. I loved being around kids and interacting with them and families. And when I was first asked to be a reading recovery teacher, the first thing that I did was go home and cry. Because A, I didn't want to deal with change. B, I wanted to be with kids. C, I was scared. And then I woke up the next morning after talking to, you know, my friend Paul and my mom. They're like, Judy, you're getting offered an opportunity to get trained at NYU. You're going to be a reading specialist. So of course I said yes. Mm-hmm. And I did it. And for 4 years, I served in that role. And many of the learning experiences that I had were incredible. It started my journey and passion for loving to work and help kids learn how to read. I loved that it was one-on-one. I loved that I was behind this glass window and people were giving me feedback about how I'm working with kids. Wow. I loved that I got to sit with a kid every day. And you know what? I had some success. I would say probably about a 50% success rate. And 50% is not that much. And I know I could have done a lot better. So although there are things that were so good in my training, and I have the good list, I made a good list and a bad list. And I also...
I did too.
Oh my God, see? And then I made a good and a bad list because you know what? These conversations have to start happening. They can't just be the SOR people are just talking to each other. This has to be a conversation that whether you're trained in balanced literacy, whether you're SOR only, whether you're a little in the middle, that you go this way and that way, we got to talk. And then at work today, when I had a lunch break, I decided to print out Faith's article, right? I wanted to be prepared. It's not Faith's article, it's Reading Recovery. And I saw this rope that I've been seeing like 1,000 times. I mean, I can't with the rope. Sometimes I feel people only show the rope because they don't even know what else to talk about. Many good things on that rope. Then I printed out another rope to compare, a structured literacy rope. And when you just look at the two models, they have a lot in common. The problem is when you look a little bit deeper on the one that we're talking about today, and when you look, yes, we did do things like the five pillars, right? We talked about, we did some meaning stuff and we practiced phrasing and fluency and we talked about new words. And I'll talk about the good stuff later because I'm not afraid to say there was good stuff, but there were some fundamental gaps. Okay. First of all, as an educator, I really wish I knew in 2013 what I know now. And Faith wrote that book. She didn't talk to me, but she must have known she was going to meet me. But anyway, I did not know all my syllable types that well. And I know Faith and I, we talk about it every episode. What a terrible thing that I didn't know them. How much more effective as an educator, whether I was doing my ENL in the afternoon, which is English for second language learners, or doing reading recovery one-on-one, or coming in as an AIS academic intervention specialist, if I had that knowledge, do you know how many more kids I could have helped? Rather than looking at the first damn letter, all right, now, yeah, look at that picture. You know what my ENL kids did when they looked at that picture? They had no idea what to say to me. Now, if they knew the way a vowel team worked and that it makes a long sound, maybe they would have had a chance for success. We missed the boat on decoding. And no matter where my next journey goes, you know, I've been invested in this journey, learning about the science for the last 7 years of my life. I mean, everybody knows, whether it's on the Metro North in the morning, or when I'm drinking my coffee, or when I'm posting on social media, all I think about literally is my children and other people's children, because we got to get it right this time, and we didn't. So yes, there were good things, but there was a hell of a lot that needs to change.
So, you know, interesting. And Judy, again, very brave of you. And I really admire you to be able to look back and be reflective and say, you know what? There were these fundamental gaps. When we're on social media and you see it, Missy, sometimes you talk to people and you feel like you're in the twilight zone. I do. I feel like, how do you not understand at this point that maybe things have evolved? And what's the harm in saying, you know what? I didn't know at the time. I did the best I could. But now that I know, we're going to do things differently. I mean, I could look at my own teaching that way. Judy clearly is looking at her own teaching that way. Missy, you as a teacher, now that you looked at things through your son's eyes and as a teacher, I'm sure now that you could be outspoken without blaming teachers. This is not about blaming people, but it's about taking the opportunity to evolve. Your thoughts, Missy, on that?
Yeah, I love that part about not blaming teachers. I mean, as a former teacher, I would be blaming myself, you know, and a teacher that fully believed in this. And even though I taught older kids, I certainly had kids who had gone through reading recovery, who had been in interventions for years, and they still weren't reading in third, fourth, fifth. And even when I taught middle school for a little bit, I had kids that weren't reading in sixth grade. And I didn't know, you know, the six syllable types. I didn't know that that's what they needed. I was giving them, you know, mini lessons and creating book clubs and having conversations and giving them just lower level books so they could kind of have a similar experience as their classmates. And so, yeah, it's not about blaming teachers at all. I always like to say it's about seeing where I am and seeing where the science has evolved. Even some of this is not even an evolution of science. It's been around for a long time. Our science, I mean, some of this evidence goes back 50, 60 years. It's not something that's new. It's about taking what we know to be true, that's evidence-based, and giving, like looking at that real closely and saying, what can I learn? And then what's the next thing I can do in my classroom to ensure that every kid learns to read? I mean, I think the biggest travesty for me was that we spent 20 weeks in a program that A, cost a lot of money to train teachers, and it actually costs a lot of money to run every year in a school setting. It's one-on-one. That is like premium, you know, better than tutoring, and it's free to kids in a school setting, but it's costing districts a lot of money. But we're still not giving kids the skills to become proficient readers beyond that program. And even though some kids may have had success, I always wonder, what did those kids look like in third grade when you know, they face multi-syllable words and those numbers of books, you know, the system disappeared. We pulled the system away and we gave them real books and we said, read. And we gave them science and social studies content and we said, read and learn. What happens to those kids? I know for my child, what happened to him was, you know, a series of, he would guess at words. He would look at the first letter. He would substitute words. So he had a series of really bad habits that took years to undo. And so we know this. And he's not the only one. He writes to school with a group of kids, 7 children, who are all in reading recovery and now have to be in a really intensive intervention school to learn to read in the 5th and 6th grade. And they all were products of reading recovery. 6 of those actually passed reading, whatever the word is, they graduated. Thank you. Yes. And my child didn't. And he was actually probably had more skills than a couple of kids in those groups. And he didn't pass, but some of those kids did pass. And he ended up, they still needed intensive interventions in order to be able to read years later. And I think if we know this, if we know that the program, even though we love it, I loved what I did. Man, I was reading and writing workshop guru. My room screamed. There were anchor charts. I was clearly doing my mini lessons. I had my small group table over here to do guided reading. And I had all the buckets of books. My classroom library was just overflowing with books. And I was passionate about it. And I could defend it. But then I thought, oh, I knew all that. And then I had a hard look in the mirror when it was my own child. And I said, it's not working. And now I know those kids, those mystery kids in my room, the ones that couldn't read and I couldn't figure it out. And I was frustrated about it. I would go to my principal and say, how can I give a kid an A in reading? Because I differentiated, but they're reading on a 2nd grade level in the 5th grade. I'm communicating something to the next year teacher that isn't true.
Exactly.
And so I had a hard look at myself and learned. So it's not about the teachers. I think it's about the system. And I think as leaders in the field, if you've got someone who is a leader in reading recovery or any balanced literacy leader who's an influencer, who's, responsible for sharing information with teachers, it's on them to say, hey, we got some things wrong.
Yeah.
And this is what we got wrong. And this is the evidence. And we're reworking this. We're doing an overhaul. We're sorry we got it wrong, but we're on this path to learning with you. And that's not what I'm hearing. I think this Scarborough's rope from Reading Recovery is the greatest dupe ever. We always love a good dupe. This is not a dupe I would.
Wait, do you mean it's
Yes.
Believe me, last time I didn't have this ready. I knew for this conversation I needed it.
I knew it. I
know
you
need one
too.
Did it scare you?
What?
I didn't scare you with my toy.
No, actually, I was like, bring it on.
Bring it on. So, Judy, Missy talked about the idea of, again, being reflective and how hard it is sometimes to say, you know what? I really can't defend this. I just can't defend these practices. I think that when you are in a classroom, I'm going to talk just about my own experience. When you're in a classroom, you are in your own little silo, right? And you don't look and say, ooh, when they get out of my room, when they're in 3rd grade, 4th grade, 5th grade, that maybe what I did will have this impact later on, that maybe I didn't realize the repercussions of what I'm doing now could be problematic when they get older, because it appears like they're being successful. That's the appearance in a 1st grade classroom when they're using those types of books with predictable, repetitive text. It gives the feeling of success. Judy, do you have any thoughts on that in terms of the types of books used? And
I have 1,001 thoughts. I also want to mention, today is a wonderful day. So this episode honors mothers. This is our Mother's Day special month. And thank you, Missy. And thank you for being brave to tell your personal story. I mean, that's some story, right? To see your child in pain or struggling, that's not fun. And to be able to talk about it is amazing, because there's so many parents that are sitting in their houses, confused, worried, terrified, scared. There's people that are just trusting the school system. the school's doing the right thing. And for you to be that voice, amazing. And there was somebody else, I have to say, today's a historic day. Today's a really historic day in New York City. I was, and I don't usually like to talk about work because all views are my own and so forth. But, you know, I was sitting there during a lunch break and I put on YouTube and it was a live streaming of the Chancellor of New York City. Mm-hmm. And the Chancellor's speech was incredible. I have to say thank you. I had so many people walk to me after, oh, come on, Judy, you can't believe everything you hear. I said, no, after 25 years in education, today, I am more optimistic than ever. And one of the things that he said, it was almost like a moment that I wanted to cry and smile at the same time. I don't want to quote him exactly. I wrote down some things. He said something to the effect of, your inability to read is not your fault, is something we should be saying to many of our children today. He continued to say, your inability to read is not your fault, or to teach the kids the right way, it's not your fault, teachers. Your inability or your child's inability not to read is not your fault, to parents. You know, the parents that have probably heard, as I've spoken to many other parents, being told, go read to your kid, go read them a book. Are you reading enough? Yeah, that's teaching auditory processing. It's not actually teaching kids how to lift the words off your page. And then one other thing he said that, you know, it was a real moment. He said, you've all been given a false playbook. Mm-hmm. And whether the intentions were good or bad, I do believe that Reading Recovery in its original form, when Mari Clay was alive, was probably well-intentioned. May she rest in peace. Things change. Research changes. What we know now is very different than what was effective before. And I don't feel angry at myself. I always know or knew that I always did the best that I could. However, when I walk into those classrooms and I train teachers, I make sure I say, hey, these things are great that I did before. Let me show you some melatonin boxes, or let's work together. I know, Missy, you mentioned a couple of minutes ago, you know, your reading recovery teacher. Mm-hmm. Some reading recovery teachers were different. We didn't all have the same exact trainers. When I did writing with my students, there was a lot of writing that the kids, I watched that pencil move or that pen moved. And when I saw mistakes, we were trained to use cover-up tape, not to habituate bad patterns. Mm-hmm. Elkonin boxes, spelling boxes, those things are great. Mm-hmm. But Faith asked me, and I sometimes get a little hyper, she asked me about books, right? So in terms of books, when we started this journey, Faith and I, about a year ago, I told Faith, I'm still in love with my leveled library. I still have it in my garage. I have a lot of clients that come to me and I save it for the right time. I wasn't able to say that years and years ago. It was always the right time to pull out a book that said, I love mom, I love dad, I love Chuck E. Cheese, whatever you were saying. But then when I really thought about it, and it took me a little while to really think deeper, why are there words that are multisyllabic in a level A? Like, that makes no sense. Now, take an ENL student that potentially just came to this country, or take a kid that doesn't have a rich, you know, vocabulary or something, and you're showing them a multisyllabic word in level A? It's Faith, isn't there a song, I don't know if it was in the 80s or 90s, I like music, wasn't there a song, Things That Make You Go,
I'm not sure we're going to win any awards for that rendition, but
that's true. And that's why I'm a podcast host / teacher, coach, whatever I am. I definitely, truly in my heart of hearts, think leveled books can serve a great purpose when kids are ready for them. When kids are ready at point of difficulty, they're not doing a million things. does this make sense? Does it sound right? Does it look right? Of course, we want kids to integrate all three sources of information. Yes, that is the ultimate goal. But when you're telling a kid to do all those things, when they're just learning how to read, instead of making decoding as the first course of action and sliding at point of difficulty, some brains are like, I can't even curse on the air. I shouldn't even do it, but like,
yeah. So it's a podcast, so nobody is seeing Judy.
Oh, that's Mal, right.
Mal W-T.
Thank you for providing the captions that we need.
Exactly.
But you know what? I'm going nuts today because listen, now things are shifting. It's a revolution. Faith, I thank you. You started this revolution a long time ago with your books and your voice and your spirit and your blogs. I've been part of this revolution for like 6 or 7 years now. We're both more passionate than ever. We got Missy. We got a lot of great people coming on and telling their story. But don't think we're not going to hit any roadblocks as we go towards this path. Okay, there's going to be classrooms that we still see that aren't effective. The word leveling can still be thrown around and confused when to use it. And there might be the shortage of decodables. And then we might need to print baskets. What does our library look like? We're going to hit hurdles on this journey too. And then my fear is that people on the other side or in the middle or whatever side they're on, see, I told you, it didn't work.
Yes. Yeah, good point. Very good point, Judy. So Judy mentioned Elkhonon boxes. And for those listening who do not know what that is, imagine like graph paper where the kids are hearing the sounds in words and then supplying the letters after they could hear every phoneme or every individual sound in a word. And then they would put the letters into those boxes. First tokens and then letters is usually the course of action in using Elkhonon boxes, but it varies. So I want to throw out a question to you, Missy. Since Judy mentioned Elkhonon boxes, on that sheet, on that infographic.
Faith, I'm going into my garage in a minute.
Wait a minute. Let me talk.
I know what's talk.
It says on here that the teacher draws a box for every letter after they get the sounds in the word, and they're able to then see that the letters are symbols for those sounds. But it confused me in terms of that way of describing it. To draw a box for every letter doesn't necessarily represent the phonemes. Your thoughts, Missy, on that? Was that something that, A, that you saw your child coming home with or you witnessed yourself? And what are your thoughts about that?
Yeah, to me, it explains so much. One of the books that he has, there, it's literally like he taped each of the letters as he was working through words. I think it was early on in reading recovery. But what was I think challenging for him is that every letter is not necessarily a phoneme. Like EA, if you break that up, then it's like, you know, let me think of a word as B-E-A-T. So beat, well, it's like B-E-A-T. You know, you're going to end up sounding out the word incorrectly because you're not teaching him that E and A is a vowel pair and then it needs to go together and it makes one sound. And there's a reason why it makes a sound. And so to me, even though I think that's what is so, I call it a dupe in the beginning, but I think a lot of what's in reading recovery looks good and sounds good to an untrained eye. I mean, I had the privilege of actually observing numerous reading recovery lessons because our school was a reading recovery school. So we went in, we were required to go in and see these interventions.
Yes.
And kind of just enhance our learning and see if we can use some of the same strategies with some of the kids in our classrooms. And there were no red flags then. I thought she's doing like and really like enhanced version of what I'm doing in my room. And it's amazing. And I didn't see any red flags because at that time I didn't have the knowledge I have now. But now that I know, looking back at Matthew, it's no wonder like Matthew needed systematic, explicit, direct instruction. Like, but he also needed an extreme version because he is dyslexic. But also my middle child that isn't needed it too, because he also can't spell very well. And he has struggles really hard with multisyllabic words. So Matthew couldn't get past one syllable words or single syllable words. So when we got to multisyllabic words, he fell apart. It was a total guessing game. And so for me, that's just one good example of something that looks good, but it's not really evidence-based because it's like there's a disconnect between like they've got this great evidence-based practice, but they're lacking the underpinning, the knowledge base, and the training to actually implement it correctly and in a way that is going to create a proficient reader. It's going to give kids skills beyond this lesson, beyond this intervention. And even going back, you mentioned earlier about the leveled readers. I'm going to side note there really quick, but you know, when you're taking those skills over here and then the leveled reader has words that aren't being taught over here, that's another disconnect too. So I'm learning words and I'm not learning them correctly. And then I'm getting a book that has maybe sometimes that word, maybe not. It's kind of incident. We call it incidental phonics, you know, like, oh, you don't know a word. Let me teach you the rule for that. And then let's move on. Not understanding that kids need, like I do, you do, you know, I do, we do, you do, like, and some kids need that like over and over and over before it actually sticks. And then those leveled readers are my biggest red flag was when Matthew was reading those and he was like reading it so well, but then he would occasionally be like, you know, the horse pony example, a word that was totally wrong. But the big red flag and why I never understood was that last page didn't follow the pattern and he fell apart. Every time, none of those words.
The love or the like in an F&P book, like, give me a break. Like, what?
Yes.
Now you're not moving to the next level because of love versus like?
Yes. So I think that it's just a great example of there's this disconnect. Like there are, like Julie mentioned, there are some good things in there. And I can even probably say that there were some good intentions. But I think that the disconnect is that it's not evidence-based and we're not teaching kids the actual phonemes. There are 44 of them. There's not just 26 letters. So if you're having kids break those up individually and not read them the way they're supposed to be sounded out, and you're not connecting the sound, the phoneme to the grapheme, then there's a disconnect for the kid. And if you look at any video out there and you watch some of these lessons, you can even see sometimes the misdirection for the kid. And the kid is not responding in the way they need to respond, and they're frustrated, and the teacher then just fills in the blank for the child, which doesn't teach the kid to sound the word out. It just teaches the kid to rely on someone else to be able to read, which is not teaching them to read.
So Judy, I know you love Elkhonen boxes.
I do. And
you talked about Elkhonen boxes being evidence based in use, but I think Missy pointed out, and I think I feel the same way, that the way Elkhonen boxes seem to be used in reading recovery, from what I witnessed and what basically they described, does not sound like what I would see, whether it's speech to print or print to speech. Any of those evidence-based approaches would not use Elkhonen boxes letter by letter. Your thoughts on that?
All right. So while you were all talking, I was sitting and drawing some Elkhonen boxes.
Right? Love it.
So I thought of some words, right? So the word ship, right?
Did you say?
Hey, first of all, can I ask you a question?
Yes, go ahead.
All right. Why does your mug have a sound?
Why does it have a, it doesn't have to. The sound could be z as well.
Thank you. Why? Where is it coming from? Is it standing for that word you just wanted to say? All right.
Not by itself. Not, you know, unless the word is sure or sugar.
That's right. It's all right. So anyway. Not. All right. Thank you. All right. So the word ship, right? So I would draw in the beginning, early stages. First, you do the stage where it's like these empty boxes, right? And you're pushing chips, right? It's just an auditory skill.
Mm-hmm.
Then the next stage would be three boxes for a word like ship. The diagraph would be one box because it's two letters.
Wait a minute. Are you saying S-H-I-T?
No, I already told you.
I know, but wait a minute. Sh-I-T. How many boxes?
Ship.
Okay. What? In my world, the word shift.
No, it's ship, like a ship in the old
ship. Oh, ship. Oh, going on a ship. I'm hearing first shit. Then I'm hearing shift. Now
I'm obsessed with phonemes. I'm obsessed with graphs.
Sorry,
I know my diagrams. Anyway, the word was ship. So the diagraph would share a box, okay? Then I wrote another word. Missy made a very good point. A word like team. So for a word like team in the early stages, there would be three boxes.
Mm-hmm.
Child would take their finger. Team, repeat the word team. Let's slide in team.
Mm-hmm.
What sound do you hear in the first box? Good. Team. What sound do you hear right here? Kid might know, kid might not know, kid might just say E. Okay. Put in an E, or I could model an E. Kid can copy an E. Now, the kid might not know vowel teams. They might have seen it in foundations or whatever their phonics program is. If they didn't, you would add an A into that same box because it's two letters making one sound. Now, yes, of course, I would have been so much better had I used that explicit language. This is a vowel team. Some reading recovery teachers might have. They might have been Orton Gillingham trained before. I was Orton Gillingham trained after. And then the last box was a hmm. Now, the prompting changed for that box. What do you hear? What do you hear? And then the prompting would change for the A. What would you expect to see? Now, that can start happening, that discussion, when you're learning that sequentially in phonics. So bottom line is, yes, we could all have done better, but we can't say everything that every reading recovery teacher was doing wasn't aligned. Maybe things didn't look the same.
Can I just ask you a question?
You didn't see me in the field, Faith.
I'm still not understanding the box for every letter. That still does not.
No, I didn't say about the box for every letter. Right now, the E and the A in the early stages share the box.
Okay, yes. Early stage. So now what?
Early stage. So you and I, we've spoken about this on other episodes. So the goal, like anything else, is a gradual release model, right? Good teaching really should. I'm showing you how to do something. We're practicing together. My goal is to make sure you fly like a bird, right? So whether or not this was the best thing that happened, I don't know. But I do think it fostered some independence when there was a box for every letter. It transitioned into something called a spelling box because the prompting changed. There was a slide motion. So if the word was like team, and I know you disagree because we've spoken about this before and we could speak about it again. I feel great doing that because, wow, what a rich discussion, right? So four boxes, you're not pushing, team, you're sliding, right? Team, what do you hear in the first box? Team, what do you hear in the next box? Now, there's
I get it.
Wait, let me finish. But you get it, but the viewers might not, right?
No, but I just want to get an answer to my question.
So then there would be a box for an A. And instead of saying, what do you hear? the prompting changed. What do you expect to see? Now, some kids might not expect to see anything. Maybe that prompting wasn't great. Maybe you could have had a foundation's little flip chart near you. We can get better, but we can't just say that every single thing we did in the past is wrong, because guess what? Elkhonon boxes.
But it's not the past, Judy. It's the present. They actually put this up and it says it in black and white that they do this now. And I just want an answer. What the heck are the boxes around every letter for? That's the only
thing I
want to know.
Listen, Hegarty just now, Hegarty just shifted their program, and I don't usually like to name programs. They just shifted. Their first version was spending a lot of time on skills that weren't as high leverage. And now they are focusing on first sound fluency, last sound fluency, segmenting and blending. People shift. Now I saw a Hegarty PD that
but
they're showing
not shifting. If they put it, if they put this down on this chart, that is not demonstrating a shift.
Okay, so then say
it's demonstrating
exactly
that they're trying to co-opt the science of reading so that people will then accept reading recovery, that they are doing the right thing. That's how
But what exactly on the paper are you referring to? Like the
It says right here under phonological awareness that a final transition is made and the teacher draws a box for every letter. That I highlighted that part because I guess for me, what I thought was so concerning about this, I highlighted a lot on here, but what was so concerning was that if you start off doing it, it sounds like in the beginning there was an attempt to do it more, a little bit more the right way. I still kind of have some disagreements with the original way, mainly because I feel like if there's a scope and sequence, I'm teaching a skill.
100%. We're on the same page.
And then the words that we're practicing are going to, you know, this is like, I teach it, you practice. Now let's put it into some simple sentences and let's get some sentence fluency practice. And then let's move up to some decodable readers that have skills taught. So the kids actually, what's been taught, right? If you're teaching them that, and then later you're breaking it up, I'm just imagining, especially because this is for children who are struggling, the cognitive overload, you know, that a child is going to get when you kind of do it almost right the first time and then you switch it up and then you've got them looking at every letter versus sounds. We really want to train their brain when they see that vowel pair to always read it together and to
100%.
Know. So,
okay. That's why we have to be very specific with what we're telling our kids, right? So in the field right now, I'm coaching people. I'm working with students in my own basement. And instead of just saying, look at the picture. Oh, don't sound it out. Those were the messages kids were getting for a very long time. Don't sound it out. Mm-hmm. Think about what makes sense.
Right.
Yes, the integration of those three pieces is the ultimate goal. But the making that or three things as your first course of action when you're struggling or learning how to read wasn't the best thing ever. And I actually just put 3 stars and I didn't do while we were speaking. I put it before because I am such a reflective practitioner, right? That's what a good teacher is. That means reflecting and shifting as needed. One of the biggest red flags for me was, and my eyesight is not great, the print on that document is very tiny. So here I go.
Maybe on purpose.
It's maybe on purpose, right? It's been on my to-do list to read it closely every day, but it's so damn small that it's hard. So here I go with my middle-aged eyes. There are first and last letters in words that you can choose upper and lower case letters. Spaces are there for a reason. Okay, there's first and last letters. How about there's many, many letters in words? And we have to know how
I highlighted that to you. Yes.
I mean, that the Elkhonon boxes, we could go around with that. There was a lot of good in that. I'm not going to go crazy with that. We'll talk about that off camera, Faith, again, about spelling boxes when we're at Margaritaville or something. However, this nonsense, there are first and last letters.
Probably all highlighted that as well. So here's another one. So Missy, this one's for you. It also talks about sight words.
Uh-huh.
And it says
that's
sight words are explicitly taught. Sight words are explicitly taught. So now I don't know what that means, explicitly taught. Is it this, they're sent home to be memorized? Is that explicitly teaching a sight word? Tell me what that means. I'm having difficulty understanding that.
I almost highlighted this whole paragraph. And I think first thing I'll say is sight words are any word that a child has learned to read, you know, automatically.
Thank you. Yeah.
So a sight, that's actually just that language tells me red flag.
Red flag.
Red flag. Right. It's like when you're going on a date with somebody, when you see a red flag, you go home and you think, uh-oh, I'm in trouble.
Yes. Right.
Exactly. This one for me is really personal because a child that's struggling cannot memorize words. That is never an intervention that needs to be pulled off the list. And many words that we might have previously called sight words or high frequency words are actually decodable. And then that we can teach kids the decodable parts and then even like the parts that aren't, that we call them the tricky parts or heart words, whatever your program might call it, but we can still teach kids. And so anything that, you know, that refers to words in general as sight words to me is like, no. And then Matthew, for example, only acquired a handful of words, most of them single syllable and a few multi-syllable words, because he was taught to look at the first letter and guess. So when I read that, I thought, what do you like? Words matter. And so for people to put the word explicitly in here or even systematic, or, you know, we can go back and even some of the other parts, but when words have meaning and when you put those in there, it better be true. Or you're communicating a message to a group of people that you've been tasked with leading. If you want to be a leader in the field and you want to have a voice in the literacy conversation, then your voice needs to be one that can be trusted. And so I don't understand how you can explicitly teach words in isolation and context. And also this part here, the words, they must be known to automatically in order to serve as footholds. That's true. But the way we get there is through teaching kids how to decode the words. They even go on, you know, that they're the basis for visual and sequential analysis, as well as using a known way to get to a new word by analogy. So that's that whole part about, like, if you know this word, you could know.
If you know oak, you know cook, and you know book, and you know took, and you know shook.
Yeah, right. But we know that that's not always true. And there are rules that actually define those, that actually, you know, determine those sounds for our kids. And so that whole part, I thought, let's just take it out and just let's teach kids to decode the words. Let's teach the phonemes and match them to the graphemes. That's what our kids need. They don't need to be memorizing. So, and it's harmful because what it does is it teaches kids, I can't do this, because memorization is never a good skill. It's never a good intervention or accommodation. And so when they can't be successful at it, we're just reinforcing, I can't do this. My child, literally, I'll just never forget, we were several years into this of just being failed over and over with bad interventions, starting with reading recovery. And he thought that he was stupid. He even said, you know, I'm so dumb, I can't read, you know, and at one point, throw me in the trash can. I can't do this. And the frustration and the anxiety that come along with that, it was heartbreaking. I felt helpless. And as an educator, I felt even more helpless because I thought, why can't I help my kid? What do I not know?
So Missy, I just want to say something. I have had over the years a number of children who were released from reading recovery, not recovered, and then their parents getting in touch with me in second grade and third grade, still needing intervention, but even worse, having practiced some of these bad habits, it set them back further because now you're breaking these bad habits and trying to establish new ones. So although I love the idea that reading recovery was given in first grade, which I believe is probably the strongest point, is that they're trying to get kids at the earliest moment in time to try to catch them when, Everything is flexible. They're learning at that point. It's like the perfect idea in theory to try to get kids one-on-one, to try to give them intensive intervention every day, the 30 minutes a day. There's so much about that that makes sense that I think it's hard for people to accept that there are things wrong with it. Because when you look at it from above, it looks and sounds like it all makes so much sense. And I think that's the problem, that when we try to pick it apart, people say, come on, what are you talking about? They're picking kids up when they're first learning how to read. And what could be the problem with this? That's what good readers do. They use information on the page. They problem solve. They word solve. That language alone, to me, is problematic, that they have to solve words instead of just, hey, left to right all through the word reading. If you know how to read, if you understand the structure of words, if you understand that it's a code, whether it's a speech-to-print approach or print-to-speech, and I know you guys both mentioned syllable types, I know that there are ways to teach without using syllable types and without rules, and they still work because it is systematic, explicit, cumulative. You know, I think those are the key components to any good reading program. But I don't see that here. And I also find it troubling that they used the Scarborough reading rope to explain their point. Like, I wonder what Hollis Scarborough would think about this.
So are there graphic. Copyright laws on using that graphic?
Well, exactly.
Everybody's using the graphic, everybody and their mother.
But not rewriting it to fit their terms. That's different. I can use it, but I'm using it the way I think it was intentioned, not to use it and then kind of sell a program based on that it fits in with this simple view of reading.
You know what's interesting, Faith?
Yeah, what?
Faith, so I've actually been thinking about this. The second you mentioned that Missy's coming on, this has been all that's on my mind, okay? And I just took little notes now, but this has been on my mind.
I didn't hear you.
I have a very hard time. Do you hear me?
Now I do.
I have a very hard time believing that intentions are bad. I do. I think that putting out a graphic, maybe, and maybe it's just me being an optimist, because
Your sound just went out again. I heard it's just you being an optimist, but I didn't hear
you. You hear me now?
Yes.
Okay, so maybe it's me being an optimist, but I think there's something good about that rope coming out. I'm a little tired of the rope because everybody's over-roping, but reading recovery putting out that rope, in my sense, I'm hoping it's an acknowledgement that phonics is a priority, phonemic awareness is a priority, the decoding the way we've taught it hasn't worked for so many kids. Does that mean that we didn't have successful kids? I ran into a kid that I serviced in reading recovery that's now in a private school. He got a paid tuition free. There are success stories. There were pockets of success for some kids. But when Missy sits here and tells me it didn't work for her child, I hear you, Missy. I really, really hear you. And that's why I've invested 6 years of my life thinking about this, not on a surface level, but on a very deep level, to the point that I even noted more stars for myself about something, you know, I've been talking with other colleagues and friends. Here's another big flaw that I noticed. Are you ready? You ready?
Yeah. Faith, how you feel? I'm listening.
All right. So guided reading seems to be going out of style, right? Kids were sitting at the same level for like 100 years, and I walk in and you're still on a level A, and 3 weeks later, you're still on a level A, and then you're on a level D, and the teacher doesn't have time to progress monitor, and I'm getting to it. I think they could read better. there's great things going on in schools right now. Acadian screeners, this is big. I don't think Reading Recovery is going to ignore all of that. And the fact that they even mentioned that, I hope something good's going to come out of it. I hope this explanation of their role is just the beginning of their journey, the journey that I started 6 years ago. And this was the very interesting thing. Think about when we were doing, and I know you've thought about it probably, Faith. There's nothing you haven't thought about. I love you. Think about.
I need a button.
When
you need a button too now, right?
Wait, think about. Think
Judy,
about.
Go ahead. Because you're a
think about comprehension. About so even I myself have worked with kids that can't read. And here, kids years ago were given a level C book. How the hell do you think a kid in eighth or ninth grade felt getting a level C book? And let's think deeper. How do you think that child felt when their auditory processing was much higher than the words they could lift on the page? And now they're being asked these simplistic, simple questions. What happened first? What happened next? Why was Sock so sad when somebody did this or that? So we missed the ball on so many different things. I think it's time to have those real discussions. I think it's time to let go of the fear. But I also think, and this is a real strong point, that I think we can't just dismiss and not hear things from any side, because maybe there were things that did align. And I think sometimes so many of our discussions in general in education is about what are our differences. And even like my friend, you know, we had my friend Izzy on once. She's African-American and one of my best friends. And I said, Izzy, wouldn't it be wonderful if sometimes we could talk about our differences, but also what we have in common and what, you know, you and I share together and what our cultures might share together. So I think the journey to always say, this is my way, this is my way. Yes, that's important. It's our identity, but also hearing people's views is very important, which is why we're called The View.
Yes. So now, Missy, I know you were looking for a bullshit button. I know you wish you had one. As Judy was saying, you think that, you know, that this could be a positive in using the Scarborough Reading Rope. I'm going to press the BS button for you right now.
Thank you.
Oh, no.
Yeah. I can't. I think the couple, there's a couple reasons.
Okay. Go ahead.
Yeah. The first one is that it's not like they looked at Scarborough's rope and said, we align. They took the rope and they took what they do and plugged it into the rope. So that's red flag number one for me. It's that.
Me too.
Yeah. It's like, if it aligns, it lines. And I also say, if you've got nothing to hide, you've got nothing to hide. So like, if you were aligned with the science of reading, why didn't you say that several years ago when everybody was screaming you weren't? Right. Yep. And you've dug your heels in of all the companies out there. You know, some of the big balanced literacy, you know, we've got Fontas and Pinnell, we've got, you know, Lucy Calkins, and we've got Reading Recovery. They're all kind of connected. But at least Lucy said I got some things wrong.
Missy, every time somebody says Lucy, you're supposed to take a shot. So I'm taking some seltzer.
All right, I got my pineapple. Spindrift here. But like, I guess, you know, like, and I don't really even know that I still don't fully believe that Lucy understands everything either. So I'm not giving her a stamp of approval. I'm a tough cookie though. I mean, cause when a kid is failed and their dreams are reduced to learning to read when they're nine, this is not just like, you don't get my trust. You earn my trust. So for all of us parents, and even teachers who trusted you, we trusted you to lead us and guide us as teachers. And we trusted you as parents to teach our teachers and our districts how to do this well. So red flag, you forced your system into a well-researched and evidence-based understanding of how Yes. kids learn to read. That's number one. Also, I posted this on Twitter a few days ago, but I feel like this is a play right out of Clay's book. You know, I there was an article, but I think it was even referenced on another podcast, you know, where Mary Clay, you know, stares at the guy and, you know, he says, you know, your program does not align with where are we going? And it was not going to be in compliance with Reading First. And she says, I'm not changing a thing about it, but I will change the way I market it. All right.
Exactly.
So it feels like round two of I'm not changing what we do. And no one's really going to know if we tell them enough to make it sound like we're kind of like that. And I mentioned earlier that language matters, you know, as states are at writing language into laws. I know we recently did in my state to ensure that kids would get evidence-based instruction. So no wonder all these companies are now suddenly popping up with their evidence-based and their structured literacy and their comprehensive and their systematic and their sequential. They're using all the buzzwords. Well, those words have meaning. And so you can't just throw them out because it's what will get you on some state's approved list of curriculum or interventions. And so I am not seeing changes in what they do. And then the third problem I have, my third red flag that I wrote down over here is simply who they elevate as voices to defend them. You know, routinely people who attack parents, who attack, I was attacked by a very loud voice on Twitter, and he recently was tweeted by them today. There's a quote here: the science of reading movement is repeating the same narrative and myth-based approach to blaming teachers and schools, demanding more and earlier from students, and once again, neglecting to learn the lessons right in front of us. No, it's not teacher, but it's not teacher bashing.
It's not.
I don't feel the teacher. I feel enlightened. I feel like
enlightened.
I feel like all my answers are finally answered. In fact, we reached out to a couple of our friends back in Georgia before this podcast. And we're like, you know, what would you say if you could be on this podcast? And a former reading recovery teacher, literally her first line, Allison said this, please say you won't make me go back. I've been seeing her whole claim that the science is a myth and it's infuriating. And she even went on to say, you know, if I had to go back to the way we did it, I would leave the profession first. Because structural
teaching
makes so much sense.
I'm going to stop you right there because here's what I'm thinking. We have all changed. The three of us have changed at different points in time. I'm certainly in education longer than both of you. And, you know, celebrating age, right? So I've been doing this a little bit longer. But we've all changed, right? We've all changed from that approach to something that is truly explicit, systematic, cumulative. And I don't know anyone who changed back. Do you?
Not one person.
Once you see the light, you can't unsee it.
Well, this is what I'm saying. That to me is very telling. If you don't go back the other way because now you see the light, doesn't that mean that you're getting success? Mm-hmm. You know, I think that tells a lot. It really does. You know, I was communicating with somebody on LinkedIn. Usually I don't have these wars on LinkedIn, but it was starting a bit with two people on LinkedIn. I wouldn't call it a war, but one was a professor. The other was, you know, a reading person. And of course, they were challenging me about balanced literacy. And they both said that I don't understand what balanced literacy is, because their version of balanced literacy would be that you're taking all the components. And they said, isn't that what the National Reading Panel said? That you take all the pillars of literacy. And again, I realized where this was going. Of course, you're covering all the pillars of literacy, but it's really how it's presented, and it doesn't have that structure or that approach. But Missy, have you faced that where people would say, but we do this? Oh. I get that all the time. But we do this. Your thoughts?
Oh yes. And it's kind of, they'll pull out little skills they do, but we do this. And the other one is, and science of reading doesn't do this. It's the myths of what we omit and how they don't. And it's a, you know, this war back and forth on just myths. Mm-hmm. And at the end of the day, when I go into classrooms and I see teachers and I talk to teachers who are doing this. One of the best conversations I had was a teacher in my county. I'm in the Literacy Advisory Council as we're moving towards structured literacy. And they've piloted a structured literacy program this year. And she said, if we don't adopt this, I am leaving the county. And she said, I have never had so much success with a program in my entire life. And the benefits to this, she wasn't screaming that no one could read aloud a book to a kid, or there were no kids looking at picture books in the classroom, or, you know, she was not any of those things. She was literally saying, my high achieving kids and my kids that need more support are both excited about this. They don't want to leave my language arts class. They made progress, both groups. It wasn't just one.
You hear that, Nancy Bailey?
Yes, please. You know, and the excitement in her voice. And she, the best thing that she said was, and I don't have to spend my days looking for things to use in my classroom. Mm-hmm. I have everything I need. Can I like spice it up and make it my own? Yeah. But mm-hmm. I have a plan, a structured literacy plan, to ensure that the kids in my class are learning how to read proficiently. And she's in a Title I school. So it's mm-hmm. not like she's in a school that's, you know, super easy to teach in. She's in a school that's a little bit harder to teach in. And she's seeing that every kid in her class is succeeding. And that's mm-hmm. 1 year of piloting when she's probably not even at her best at this, right? Mm-hmm. She's just getting into the science. She's just getting her hands on some good resources. And that is really what is frustrating to me, is to see the continued launching of myths mm-hmm. And holding on. And that's why I can't truly believe and trust that people are honest in their attempt to say, I'm aligned with the science of reading, that I understand the evidence. To me, it says, I think you need to learn some more. I'm grateful that you're playing in the sandbox. Come on, right? Come on. But I need you to play a little bit longer, and I need you to find some kids that are like master sandcastle builders, because yours is struggling over here. This is not what our goal is.
I think they're master BS makers.
Well, I would agree with that too.
You know, I cannot believe that when they use this reading rope, that they were not trying to use the language, pull out. And I wrote blogs about this, a few, that sound bites and slogans and buzzwords. You know, and I just recently posted a blog I did 4 years ago, mm-hmm. rebranding balanced literacy. It could have been written today. When I read it, sometimes I forget what I write. And I looked at it, I said, boy, I could just put this out now and nobody would know the difference. Judy, some last thoughts before we wrap up.
All right, here I go. So I thought this was a great episode. I think that there's a lot that I have on my mind still. We got to monitor the situation from everybody. Missy used a key word, trust. I hope that we get it right this time, because the chancellor said it today. How did we get here, right? If we knew this approach was the right approach, how did we get here? Next, history very often in life repeats itself. So we need to monitor the new situation during transitions very carefully. There's going to be some bumps and hurdles along this new structured literacy path. We need to be reflective. We have to keep monitoring the data. If something's not working, we have to say what and why. We have to allocate enough time that kids have explicit time to practice things learned during their phonics block, because if they don't have practice time, that's a road bump. Let's never let history repeat itself again. We have a great opportunity to get it right. And what's my last one? Start asking your kids, instead of saying, and this was another one from the YouTube, instead of saying, how are you doing today? Also say, what was reading like for you today? Start asking those questions. What a telling question that could be. What a conversation that could start, right? And then lastly, another great one from today. I don't think I wrote it right, but kids will learn to love to read if they know how to read. And that's the truth.
Missy, your last thoughts, anything we didn't cover that you would like to say?
Yeah. Well, first of all, great conversation. And I love that we're on the path to learning. I hope that our conversation can model that for all the teachers, no matter where you are. If you're just hearing about it for the first time, or you're somewhere in the middle, you're struggling through and your school's not with you, I hope that conversations like this will make you feel less alone and help you find a community where you can learn. I think it's so critical that we keep having these conversations. Judy, you're so right about we don't want to repeat history, right? History has a nasty way of repeating itself in some of the worst ways. We don't want this to be a pendulum swing. We really want this to be based on what the science says about how kids learn to read, how our brains process these sounds and attach them to these letters so that every kid can become proficient. I think we have to keep talking and elevating the fact that there are going to be some wolves in sheep clothing, and that we have to call them out. We have to be brave. It's maybe not going to win us, you know, a lot of fans on the other side, but I think it's important because as people become really nervous about losing the hold they have on a market, the influence they have in schools nationwide, even worldwide, it can make you, you know, turn yourself into the reading rope when you're not really that. And so I think it's important for us to keep having these conversations. I say the best way to do that is to make sure that we train our teachers really well.
Yes.
You know, that's the way. This is Teacher Appreciation Week too. And I think the best way to appreciate a teacher is to really coach them through this process and give them great resources with knowledgeable trainers who can really walk them through this transition. And I think if we do that, then everyone in the building will be able to go, that's not aligned with what I was taught. That doesn't make sense. That's a red flag. I'm not going to do that. And then we won't have to fight these wars on Twitter and on podcasts. We will be able to have a group of teachers out there who understand the science and who can do this. They can make these decisions themselves.
What great points from both of you. So my last thoughts, just what you said, when teachers know what to look for, we won't have these types of conversations anymore. There wouldn't be a need for it. I work with teachers every day. You know, I go into schools. And when we talk, it's all about the kids. And it's common sense. It's common sense for us because we're talking the same language. So I completely agree with that point. One thing that Judy mentioned with the chancellor's words, I listened to it too, Judy, and it was phenomenal. And one thing he said was, quoting Martin Luther King, about how we can't wait. And this was another blog that I had written a while ago, why we can't wait. And this sense of urgency. And excuse me, everyone, I am hoarse. I'm, you know, doing my best. I know it's not easy to listen to this when my voice is cracked, so I do apologize. But he did talk about the sense of urgency. And I wish that every leader across the country would look at it this way, that there is a sense of urgency here. And we can't let our personal preferences get in the way. And we have to be brave enough to say, you know what? Maybe we didn't get it right then, but we have an opportunity to make it right now. That's what's done in science all the time. It's always evolving. There's no reason as teachers, we can't just say, time to move on. So it is time for all of us to move on. So I want to thank everyone for listening. It was so great having this conversation. Missy, you are a delight to speak with tonight. Just as a parent, as a teacher, happy Mother's Day. And Judy, it's always a pleasure to have these conversations with you. I love you. I love that we could be honest with each other. And I just appreciate you so much. And I appreciate the people who are listening now to the Literacy View. So Judy, hit it. Where can they follow us?
All right. So, you know, we're very unique out there. We're not tied to anything, unaffiliated, always honest. Follow us on @BoxnerJudy is my Twitter handle. Follow my beautiful Faith @FaithBurkowski on Instagram. Yes, I'm learning Instagram. Yep, I could do it. Instagram, Boxner Damski. Then we got my friend, beautiful friend Faith again, Faith11803.
No, I don't want people going to that one. I want them going to High Five Literacy.
High Five Literacy. That was a mistake, but we don't edit, so it's still there. And then we also have our Facebook group, Real Teach Loose, The Literacy View. We see a lot of you joining. We're happy to get to know you. And Faith, we have a great announcement. We have super exciting stuff on the way, because we don't want to hear from the same old, same old, same old folks, because there's a lot of passionate folks out there. So tell us, Faith, hit it.
All right. Next time, we have another super mom coming on, but this mom was a dentist who then changed to be a literacy specialist. All right. Went from being a dentist into a literacy specialist. And she and I worked together in Reading First. And her name is Dr. Maureen Ruby. And she is rocking. Let me tell you, she is super hot. She's brilliant, funny. And the reason she changed over was because of her son. So I hope you all listen, because you're going to want to hear from Maureen. She is fabulous. So, all right, we're wrapping up. Goodbye, everybody. Can't wait to see you again next time.